It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins here on the Talk Station, and you can call in with your legal questions. You can call our local numbers, too.
Local numbers are 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us this morning. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. Glad to be here.
Good. Glad you're doing well.
Thank you.
And you all are busy over there at Harvell & Collins, as always.
We are managing to stay busy, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, here it is. It's a great time of year. We're all about to have a little warm weather.
Yeah.
Everyone looks forward to that.
Looking forward to spring starting on Saturday, actually. So, all right, so what are we talking about today?
Ben, let's decipher, if we can this morning, some of the more details of a couple of documents that are fairly routine. And we talk about these documents in a general way, and yet sometimes I think it might be helpful to kind of go into more detail, and specifically the health care power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
and the HIPAA release.
Right.
There seems to be some confusion about these documents, and always the question for clients is, you know, why do I need both? And of course, always been the issue of why do we need several different documents is because they really speak to different people, if you will, different entities for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, just real quickly, the durable power of attorney is more of a financial document, and it's going to speak to the banks and to the insurance companies and to our retirement accounts and give our agent the authority to handle our financial affairs. A health care power of attorney is going to give our agent the authority to make medical decisions for us and to sign for surgery, anesthesia, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1996, the law has actually been around for a while. As part of the Clinton administration, there was the Kassenbaum-Kennedy Act, known as the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act,
mm-hmm.
or HIPAA.
Right.
And everyone now, all our listeners know, have heard that word, HIPAA,
mm-hmm.
HIPAA. And, of course, what is happening is that they are having to sign additional release forms at all of the hospitals and doctors that they go to in order to say to these physicians and to the hospitals that as to my confidential medical records, I hereby grant certain releases or waivers for certain purposes. And so now what is happening is that our listeners need to know that you need a generic, if you will, or general HIPAA release to your agent to allow them to receive your medical records and your medical information. The difference between the HIPAA release and the health care power of attorney, Ben, is that the health care power of attorney operates at a time that we are unable to
Right.
make our health care decisions.
In other words, the HIPAA release just authorizes somebody to see the records, but it doesn't authorize you to make decisions, does it?
It does not. Yeah. And it also is immediately effective. It's not contingent upon, you know, us being unable to get to our medical records.
Mm-hmm.
The HIPAA release, if you will, can serve in between husband and wife and family members, mother, daughter, father, son, you know, just for matter of convenience.
Right.
So that, you know, the primary caregiver for our elder mm-hmm. parent has access to the medical records. This does not mean that you know, the health care power of attorney gives them access when we are unable to have access or we are unable to make a decision, as you just mentioned,
right,
Ben.
Right.
So that is a distinction that our listeners need to understand. So now in our office, we actually, when we're doing comprehensive mm-hmm. estate planning for each other, we have a very simple generic HIPAA release that you sign, again, giving this authority to your agent.
Mm-hmm.
And when I use the word agent, Ben, we like to have the same folks involved in the significant decision-making
right.
in your file.
Okay.
We can, in a way, bifurcate between financial
mm-hmm.
and medical. And this many times happens that a family will say, well, I really want this child to be my financial agent, mm-hmm. under my power of attorney, my executor, my trust, because they are an accountant or they are in the business world. I think that they will make good business decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But as to my health care issues, I have this family member, and, you know, he's a nurse or she's in the health care industry. She works in a hospital or with a doctor's office, and I think that she would be the best one to navigate, mm-hmm. you know, the medical issues for our family. But once you decide those two distinguishing mm-hmm. Factors, then you want your health care power of attorney and your HIPAA release agent to hopefully be the same person.
Now, for those people who already have a health care power of attorney, but they don't have a general HIPAA release.
Correct.
Will that still work as far as getting those releases of those documents if somebody is incapacitated?
Probably not.
Really?
Probably not. This law, as I think our listeners know, subjects health care providers to significant penalties,
mm-hmm.
if they violate the act. And what I also hear from our clients is that so many of the physician offices and, you know, all of the other providers, you know, x-ray, radiology, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
chemotherapy, all of your various, you know, places that we all have to go, have their release.
Oh, my goodness, you can't go see a doctor without signing one.
Correct. And so they're there.
Yeah.
But suppose we are in an emergency situation,
mm-hmm.
and we are in a place that we just are not electing to be.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nice document to have because it works no matter where we happen to be. Okay,
mm-hmm.
no matter what provider it happens to be, wherever they happen to be located, and it is generic in nature and therefore can be used, you know, at any number of different healthcare providing places.
Okay, and again, and everybody is signing HIPAA releases when
mm-hmm.
they go to see a doctor.
Correct.
So you should include in that, I would imagine, the one that you want to be your healthcare power of attorney. You ought to be including that on your HIPAA release if you.
That's right. Your primary caregiver,
uh-huh.
Ben, should have this release. Should have this generic form. I think the form is also available out there on the internet or at hospitals or different
yeah,
places.
Yeah, usually the chaplain's office.
You know,
has it in the
but
hospital.
The bottom line is that your caregiver, I as a lawyer trying to help people, want our listeners to know that your health care giver should have this form in the repertoire of documents that they need, because it does serve a distinctly different purpose than the health care power of attorney.
Okay. All right. We'll have more on that, too, coming up in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to call in with a question about your legal life, Mandy's standing by on the phone.
You can call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, with Cecil Harvell with us, and Mandy has a question for us as well.
Yeah, is it a good idea for a single person to have a health care power of attorney?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mandy. It's a good idea for all of us to have the document, whether we're single or not. But certainly single and even young people, you know, so many folks in their 20s, you know, think that you know, I don't need a durable power of attorney or a health care or even a will because I'm young. Well, you know, accidents happen. Illnesses unfortunately do occur in that age bracket. It's not as often as it is in the elder population, but absolutely, we all need to have documents that appoint one of our loved ones in charge of making these very significant decisions for our life in case there were an accident or a sudden illness.
Okay, again, a good idea. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, folks these days that are not married mm-hmm. and but living with each other, they need to have these if they want to have that significant other in their life.
Well,
have
they
access.
Do, and you know, historically, those that were married, you know, we always heard, well, you know, my wife is able to get to my information. The spouse, you know, in our medical culture has always had a significant role then. Mm-hmm. But this law, and there are other laws, you know, affect our individual privacy.
Right.
And whether we like it or not, the spouse does not have now the authority to our medical records and our medical decision making that they once had. And of course, I know also there are listeners who say, and man, oh man, is that true with regard to a parent mm-hmm. and a child?
Right.
And particularly a parent and a child that is, you know, 16, mm-hmm. 17, you know, an age such as that. They're still a minor, but they very much might have a thought or opinion about their health care. Mm-hmm. So things of that nature have to kind of be discussed. And absolutely, whether we're married or single, we need these documents. Now, the other document, that was a distinguishing conversation, if you will, Ben, between the health care power of attorney and the HIPAA release.
Right.
Okay, and why now we need to think of both and understand why we need both. The other bit of confusion comes with regard to this, the difference between a declaration of a desire for a natural death.
Right.
And a do not resuscitate.
Mm-hmm.
And so many clients say that, you know, I really do want to have, I do not want there to be resuscitation. And I desire that I have a form that I sign that lets the medical community know that I do not want any heroic measures, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is always an interesting thing for a client to ask, Ben, because they then get the explanation that I'm about to give,
right.
Which is not really a very short explanation, but this is the explanation, Ben. A declaration of desire for natural death is something that we can sign
mm-hmm.
and that I can offer to this client. And it is a document that provides that if we're terminal, incurable, or if we are in a persistent vegetative state, now those conditions precedents, one or two of those must occur, terminal,
mm-hmm.
incurable, persistent vegetative state, that if we are in those conditions and if a physician determines that we're in one of those conditions, then the physicians are authorized to discontinue extraordinary measures, including the giving of artificial nutrition and artificial hydration,
mm-hmm.
okay, and allow us at that point to have a natural death. And this is known as a declaration of desire for natural death, or a living will is the common term that people use. And absolutely, if we are desirous of a natural death and do not want our life prolonged by extraordinary measures, then that document needs to be signed and executed when we're of sound mind. And it is wholly different and distinguishable from a do not resuscitate.
Mm-hmm.
A do not resuscitate, really, Ben, is an order, if you will, a prescription almost from our treating physician.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it is just that. It is an order or prescription from our treating physician that based on a history,
mm-hmm.
you know, stops and starts, if you will, and based on conversations with the patient, and based on the medical records and the medical history, the physician is comfortable after, again, having conversation with the patient and potentially and possibly the patient's family in signing an order that says that should this patient have a stop, then we don't want there to be a start. Okay?
Right, right.
We do not want there to be resuscitation. You, Ben, and I, Ben, we don't have the right, if you will, to sit down and write out a document, nor do I as a lawyer have the right to write out a document that says that I hereby demand that I not be resuscitated. Okay? That's a wish, it's a desire, it's precatory. We can do something of that nature. But again, that is going to be a medical decision made by the physician team at the time based on all the circumstances.
Now, a person holding healthcare power of attorney, can they override that, or they, can they
override
a
what?
A DNR order?
No. They would be the one to implement the authority of whatever document there happens to be. So I mean, again, the difference between a do not resuscitate and a living will is just kind of what I explained. A do not resuscitate is an order, a very specific.
It's like a prescription.
Prescription from a doctor based on the treatment, based on the history of the file, based on the relationship between the doctor and the patient, and a long history of what can and cannot be done for that particular patient. And that is something that we as a client would need to have conversations with our doctor with in order to obtain that. And we would only obtain it if the medical records indicated that it was appropriate. Okay? That's very different than a living will. A living will, again, is a declaration of our desire to have a natural death. Should we be in circumstances such as a persistent vegetative state, terminal, incurable, and after we have been in these conditions for a period of time and the medical records again indicate that we have been in a coma, that there has been no activity, that we have been persistently vegetative, and nothing has been keeping us alive other than the artificial nutrition and hydration and ventilation and things of that nature, then at that point, after a course of time, this document instructs the physicians or authorizes them to be able to discontinue those things.
All right. Again, if you have other questions about that, you can give us a call here as we take this break, and we'll get to you right after the break.
Yeah, I'll take your call at 800-818-2255. Local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And you're listening to Cecil Harbell from Harbell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station every Tuesday morning. We'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harbell & Collins, Attorneys at Law. They're on the web, too, at harbellandcollins.com. You'll find it at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City at 252-726-9050. Cecil Harbell is with us, too. So, Cecil, nowadays, I think when we started this program, even we weren't even talking about HIPAA so much. I mean,
no, we were not.
But now it's going to be something that, as you have that conversation about estate planning, about a will and all the other documents, it becomes part of that
It's absolutely an additional document that we now are preparing for our clients when they come in just for a will or for a power of attorney. We want to make sure that they understand this HIPAA release and that we get one in existence, you know, for their family. Now, and Ben, a lot of times, you know, we say to folks, come back to see us every 5 to 7 years. Okay, let's dust off the will, the power of attorney. Let's take it out, look at it, make sure that it's just still applicable, that nothing has particularly changed.
Right.
And what we're finding, of course, is that so many of these folks who are coming in now are at that 5 and 7 year mark from having been in 5 or 7 years ago, you know, don't have the HIPAA. And that may be the only thing that we need to add to their file to get their file complete, and to have it, you know, completely up to speed for that particular family.
Same for the living will part, too? You want to review
the
that?
The living will has been around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It really has been. I think it was practically, I know it was there when I started practicing law. Mm-hmm. So it's a good 25, 30 years of history there. So most of our clients have that mm-hmm. in their file, the living will, the declaration of a desire for natural death. There haven't really been a lot of changes in that document, I might add, also over the years. The power of attorney, the financial power of attorney or durable power of attorney, mm-hmm. Is a document that every 5 to 7 years needs to be looked at. And there are always little tweaks, if you will, and changes in that document, Ben, as case law comes down from the Supreme Court of North Carolina or the Court of Appeals, and we need to add additional grants of authority in that document. There have been changes in the tax law with regard to authority to gift.
Mm-hmm.
There have been changes in the statute with regard to the authority to proxy certain votes for certain kinds of special stock, certain classes of stock. There have been Social Security and Medicaid regulations that need to be incorporated into the document, Internal Revenue Service. So that document is tweaked every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
When we're looking at the file every 5 to 7 years and we're dusting it off for the client, they want to know that everything in the file is up to snuff and is current. Many times what we find is that, you know, a daughter's name has changed,
right.
For instance.
Yes.
There's been a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And let's keep in mind that we're still able to identify that child based on their relation
mm-hmm.
to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we would not necessarily need to change the document just because the last name of a child has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the daughter also got married.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
She was a Jones when we did the file 7 years ago, and now she's a Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the bottom line there is that we know that Jones, as she was, you know, the Teresa that was the one Teresa, the daughter
right.
of Mr. and Mrs. Jones, even though her last name now has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't change a document just based on name changes, by the way. Some of the more common changes are then when folks have died, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
who are our beneficiaries, and unfortunately the document didn't provide a contingency plan.
But life changes always are good times to come in and review those documents.
That's
as well.
Right.
And if you want to get started on that, the folks at Harbell and Collins can do that for you. Call them at 252-726-9050. They're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City and online at harbellandcollins.com.